Det är tisdagen den 19 april och du lyssnar på Ledarredaktionen, en podd från Svenska Dagbladet. Jag heter Andreas Eriksson. Varmt välkomna och hoppas att ni haft en fin påsk. Att den ryska staten bedriver informations- och påverkanskrig är välkänt och det har inte minst visat sig under Rysslands krig mot Ukraina. Som en del i den krigsföringen angrips ibland enskilda personer som Ryssland uppfattar som en fara eller som en motståndare. Det kan vara forskare, journalister, politiker, tjänstemän eller affärsmän. Egentligen vem som helst som de ryska statliga tjänsterna utser till fiende. Attackerna mot de här människorna kan handla om ryktesspridning, förtal, hetsande, trakasserier, lögnkampanjer eller alla andra typer av psykologisk krigsföring. Målet med detta är förstås att skrämma, tysta och slå ner och i förlängningen slå sönder vårt samhälle och vår demokrati. En av dem som blivit utsatt för den här typen av krigsföring är den finländska journalisten Jessica Aro. Efter att hon 2014 för tv-kanalen Yle granskat hur rysk propagandakrigsföring gick till blev hon själv offer för den. Hennes publiceringar ifrågasattes och anmäldes. Det skapades grupper i sociala medier för att attackera henne, inte bara hennes arbete utan även hennes person. Hon utsattes för mordhot och åratal av trakasserier. Nu har Jessica Aro skrivit en bok om sina upplevelser där hon går igenom också en rad andra fallstudier på hur den här typen av krigsföring går till. Och idag kommer den här boken som heter Putins troll ut på svenska. Welcome to Ledarredaktionen, Jessica Aro.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the honor is ours. As I explained very briefly earlier in Swedish, your personal experience with the troll armies of the Kremlin started in 2014. After that, you as a journalist had investigated Russian information warfare. Can you just briefly take us back to that time and tell us about what happened then?
Yes, definitely. So back in 2014, I, as a journalist, just tried to make truthful journalistic pieces, articles to the audiences, telling, maybe you remember, back then Russia was already attacking Ukraine, but yes, doing it secretly. So it was annexing Crimea, as well as putting military equipment and soldiers secretly across the border to eastern Ukraine. So I was trying to make sense of that and realize that it's so difficult because there is so much disinformation and conspiracy theories and lies being spread around that topic. And simultaneously, the troll factory was being set up as really brave Russian journalists who really still exist, the independent ones, had infiltrated such a factory already back in 2013, so a year before that. And they had found out that, in fact, Russia had set up offices, at least one at that time, in which they paid money to people who would pose as real people behind fake profiles, anonymous profiles on social media, spitting out Putin's propaganda, trying to put out the image that support for Russia and Putin's policies is bigger than what it actually is, and maybe doing something more. So I started to look into that because I found it as a threat to freedom of speech, and I wanted to know whether those trolls actually can impact real people internationally.
Yes, and what was the answer from these Russian troll farms? How did they attack you? Can you tell us about that?
Of course, unfortunately, immediately after my story was published, September 2014, I became targeted myself. So I started receiving phone calls, threatening text messages and emails coming from Russian speakers. And they were threatening me, they were asking me to go to jail, they were accusing me of crimes. There was in one phone call only the sound of a shooting gun. And I wondered, where is this coming from? And I looked from online and I found that there was a string of Russian language fake news being spread about myself, claiming that I work in close cooperation with some foreign special services. So I was being framed in a very old-fashioned propaganda trick as some kind of foreign agent. So that was only the beginning. So after that, it has continued for 7.5 years, and there has been also, unfortunately, Finnish language fake news campaigns, over 300 field pieces has been written about me on only one pro-Kremlin fake news site called What the Fuck Paper. But you know what? I have to tell that just last weekend, the anonymous hackers actually attacked against that site. So finally, there is some justice being served to that site as well. And this all has been waged against me just because I have continued doing my journalistic job, as well as then later I started to do criminal complaints, unfortunately. I was forced to make these complaints, and then it was also a really disturbing course of events that I was immediately being kind of revenged, as if mafia was out there to revenge me, trying to look for justice. So also many police officers who were investigating this case, and even some of the judges have been smeared. So so much has been mud throwing and even criminal activities. And already five people have been convicted in Finland for these activities against me. And but I have continued, and I have made my book. And you know, also in the beginning, I realized that it's not just against me who just tried to look into these Russian trolls. Kremlin, unfortunately, attacks almost anyone abroad who tries to shed light into Kremlin's actions. So unfortunately, they commit these crimes and they attack through the fake news sites, which are controlled by Putin's regime, but then also through these proxy fake news sites against Western individuals.
I was thinking when I read your book, can one, or could you, before everything happened, you knew a lot about it on a in a theoretical way, but before it happened to yourself, can you imagine for yourself how such a campaign really affects the one that is targeted? Or do you have to be there personally to really understand the force and the magnitude of this these campaigns?
That's an interesting question. I personally would have never believed that writings on internet, what majority of these acts in the end are, that they would have such a power, that they could control, for example, how I feel about myself, or how I feel about my work, or how much I'm afraid, or how much I feel anger. But this is something that I have really learned the hard way. And personally, unfortunately, internet influence campaigns do have the ability to actually control as well as even direct individuals' thinking, attitudes, and then, of course, naturally, even behavior. And this is what I'm so worried about, that these Russian trolls, and especially this head troll in the Kremlin, in the bunkers, Vladimir Putin himself, I feel that he thinks and sees the troll factories as if he's playing computer games with the rest of the world. I'll give you one example. For example, the troll factory workers have been setting up real protests involving real American citizens on the soil of United States prior to the US elections 2016. The troll factory and the Kremlin wanted to see Trump as the president of United States, and as part of that campaign, trying to push him through RT, Russia Today, propaganda sites and trolls, they also managed to mobilize real Americans into streets to protest pro-Trump protests, as well as fueling protests fighting with each other. So this is what they are capable of, unfortunately. What we are also seeing after the coronavirus pandemic really started to take over early 2020, the Russian propaganda machinery started to spread coronavirus-related conspiracy theories, as well as anti-vaccine narratives and stories. And unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of people internationally falling for them. Not, for example, taking vaccinations because they have been reading too much troll materials about those vaccinations containing, for example, dark matter or whatever.
Yes, I've seen it myself as a Twitter user. It's obvious that the so big social media platforms plays a crucial role when it's come to spreading this kind of disinformation. And as far as I understood, it's not that easy to affect them or contact them or make them help you when you get smeared online, for example. Can you tell us a little about your experience with the big social media platforms and how they work?
Unfortunately, they let Russian trolls operate, for example, on Facebook completely freely. Back in 2014, there was this new group formed in Finnish Facebook called Russian Troll Army, in Finnish Venäjän Trolliarmeija, and it was there to attack me and other journalists and researchers, as well as brainwash people into believing in Russian state propaganda. And when I tried with my friends to report this group, as it was, for example, fantasizing about my death, spreading hate speech, and breaking almost many of the rules on Facebook. And Facebook just responded by saying that this does not break our community standards. Mm-hmm. So even after 5 years of harassing me, of crowd stalking me, and finding, for example, the email addresses of over 250 of my colleagues and sending trash emails about me to them, Facebook still let this group to operate. And you know what? I even went to Silicon Valley myself to report this group and other similar groups in which propaganda architects and extremists are basically committing crime against Westerners. And they still let these groups operate. So, and unfortunately, similar groups can be found also in Swedish language. You can see, for example, Anti-Euromaidan Sweden, such a group that exists that is doing exactly the same in Swedish language and has been super active in smearing Martin Krag, who is a really respected Swedish researcher who has also become target of pro-Kremlin harassment attacks. Mm.
Your case and Martin Krag's as well clearly shows that there are people in Sweden and in Finland and in the West in general that seems happily to take part in the troll warfare of Russia. Can you say anything about these perpetrators? What do they hope to achieve? I'm talking about, example, call them internal enemies in Finland and or in the West in general. What can be said about them?
Do you mean the people who do not get paid for it?
Yes.
All right. So yeah, there are. I've come to the conclusion that there are some driving motivations, and some of these biggest motivations are just to express their sadistic nature. According to some research, internet trolls, so real people who operate as traditional internet trolls, so basically creating conflict and attacking people without a political motive. There are more sadists along those people than the rest of the population. So they just enjoy hurting other people. But then there are people who are politically motivated to join these attacks, or some get some kind of other incentive, or have some other interest to receive from benefiting from these types of attacks. For example, let's say some far-right and fringe political activists, because Russian trolls support them, because Russian trolls give them visibility, they give them more space and more headlines and more articles in the fake media, they have depth of gratitude to the Russian trolls. So they might attack be in the receiving end of these benefits in the future as well. So it's a trade-off between, for example, far-right and other fringe politicians and these trolls. But then there is the group that are joining the troll warfare because they are brainwashed and victimized by the Kremlin's information warfare. And that is the group that I'm most worried about, because I don't see any Western government or any government looking after those people. And in some countries, these populations are growing. And we are seeing, for example, in France, some people, for example, you understand this as a journalist, some people deny requests from the traditional journalists and only give interviews to RT, former Russia Today, the so-called media whose own editor-in-chief says that it's a tool of Kremlin's information warfare. So they have fallen so deep into the rabbit hole, and they hate us regular journalists so much and believe that RT is something to be supported. So this is the type of people that I'm, and we have seen this, for example, in France in Yellow Vest protests. These types of people, I'm concerned. Also, the type of people who follow these trolls and take example from them in, for example, the coronavirus question and conspiracy theories. So really, they need help and they need some kind of exit program. Mm.
You mentioned Russia Today, or RT, and Sputnik, the two propaganda channels of the Kremlin's. They have now been banned in the European Union. We can no longer access them. Was that the right step to make, do you think?
Yes, definitely. A perfect step. For too long, the decision makers of European Union have let Russian security services to pose as journalistic media and brainwash our populations. So I am now very happy to see that those channels have, at least their operating areas have become so much smaller. But unfortunately, they are still big players on social media. They are still really big in, for example, South America and other areas in the world where they have not been restricted in any way. But most certainly, I'm really happy, and we have even some really brave insiders from the RT. For example, Liz Wall, who I had the pleasure of interviewing for my book, who worked in RT America and then resigned publicly and claimed and stated correctly that this is Putin's propaganda, and she denied to work there anymore. And we need insiders like her, because still, I guess it is the Russian information warfare and the Kremlin's lies that have managed and succeeded in to make us into believing that RT is just news but with a Russian angle, and it's just use of freedom of speech. But no, it's not. It's only Putin's security services propaganda machinery.
It sounds that your overall opinion is that we in the West has been somewhat naive towards the Kremlin warfare when it comes to information. Is that a correct interpretation?
Yes, unfortunately, it is so. And it's not no one's fault, really, because the Kremlin has been super active in silencing anyone who has tried to bring up this threat of the Kremlin's information warfare. So many of us who have tried to raise the alarm and have tried to raise awareness, we have faced such silencing attempts that some of us have stopped. So if there aren't people willing to speak about this openly, then of course it's difficult to find any sanctions against Russian or the Kremlin's information warfare or find solutions to it. But yeah, for example, myself, I have heard too many times, I would say, for example, from seasoned diplomats even, that in the beginning, in 2014, when I started to raise the debate about Russian trolls, that my articles were too sci-fi. So that it was, for some people, it has been too difficult to understand that a state would cultivate troll farms and troll factories. But unfortunately, this is also what I sometimes say to people, that I wish that my book was not true, because the truth that comes out from the book concerning the Kremlin's level of aggression and cynicism is just sometimes so disturbing that it's not easy to read for some people even. So it's not easy to accept the facts that the Kremlin is consists of really crooked-minded people who are really capable of really heinous acts against us. Mm.
I saw that you wrote on Twitter that you had some problems finding a publisher in Sweden for your book. That's really sad to hear. Do you know why? Were the publishing companies afraid, or any other explanation?
Yes, I would like to hear their explanations, but I would believe that they have been only Finlandized. So basically, this topic has been too hot for them to handle. And of course, maybe it was also embarrassing to some of those people. But this is actually guessing, so I wouldn't go into speculation. But I would just say that definitely it seems that it was too much of a hot topic for the Swedish publishers, especially when there is significant information about even security of the states from Finland. We have a big case in Norway, but also when there is this super interesting and significant case of Martin Graag and how he was being thrown under the bus multiple times by Aftonbladet Kultur. Mm. And also other Swedish medias too, unfortunately.
Just a short explanation for the listeners. The word Finlandization that Jessica used earlier, it is a term that describes, what can we say, the adaption. It comes from Finland after World War II, when the Finnish society in some ways adapted to the Soviet Union and the will of the Soviet Union. Is that correct?
Exactly, yeah.
As mentioned earlier, your book contains, besides your own experience, a number of other cases of people that has been subject to this kind of warfare, among them Martin Krog, mentioned earlier. You have met and talked to a lot of these people. Are there any common conclusions from their point of view, any common experience that you would like to highlight?
Completely. Thank you so much for bringing that up. One of the key findings and key messages of this book is that many things that we as Westerners think that come us for free or are really easy for us to have, for example, quality journalism, quality academic research, or good diplomacy between countries, or even spreading awareness in different topics. Many people in the West, we seem to believe that this comes to us without any expenses. But what I really found, and to what many of the book central people are testimonials of, is that there is a heavy fighting ongoing for the freedoms that all of us here enjoy. And that fighting includes individual civilians, such as myself and many others, who do not have any training to counter security services, political warfare, or criminal attacks against them. And it's really often up to these single individuals to contain the rights and freedoms that we so much value here in the West. So what I would like to see is more support, more public support, more even political support, and all types of support to these people who we know that are fighting to just bring out basic facts about these dictatorships and authoritarian countries, such as Putin's Russia today is. So this is what I would say, that many of these people underlined, whose stories are presented in the book, and they wanted to share their stories so that everyone else in the future would have it easier than many of us had. So, for example, myself, I appreciate all the supportive messages that I receive from my stories and my books readers, as well as anyone who is kind enough to share their ideas, as well as thankfulness of, let's say, academic research made by Martin Krog. So I would love to see people, after hearing this interview, sending love messages to Martin Krog, because he has done so much for the security of Sweden, as well as for the public awareness of Sweden and how the Kremlin has attacked Sweden in his research, which he made early 2017, and after that immediately became attacked. So please send love to Martin Krag. Please.
Love to Martin.
Yeah.
One question about the present situation. Has the Russian war in Ukraine, the escalation of the war that happened in February, changed the situation in any way? I mean, now the Kremlin has really revealed itself as a sinister, evil, if you like, power. Has that changed the possibilities for information warfare, do you think?
Yes, now they are in full operational war propaganda mode. So earlier they were kind of hiding. So it was the trolls, it was the fake news, it was RT, Sputnik, and all these other Kremlin's fake platforms that were doing the bidding of the Kremlin. But now it's Putin himself. It's his close circle that is giving out these outright threats to foreign countries. For example, Finland and Sweden, we have become targeted by the threats. But of course, Putin also threatened to basically attack anyone outsider who would interfere into his war against Ukraine. So now it's just full-fledged and full-on, really heavy and super aggressive, threatening war propaganda. And unfortunately, this, I believe, we will be seeing from now on to eternity. And even Putin has been so aggressive that he has even attacked Russians who are living abroad. So he is really not saving anyone at the moment.
I was thinking both Finland and Sweden are on the verge of a NATO membership. It will be decided this spring. What could we expect will happen during the nearest future when it comes to trying to influence that decision in Sweden and Finland? What would these troll factories do?
Yeah, well, the troll factories can, of course, find some kind of new themes. I would even expect them to find some kind of new themes to revolve their anti-NATO messaging around. But what we have so far seen has been repetition of the old stuff, the old Kremlin lines. Just that there will be repercussions if we join, and then it's led to our own imagination and our own medias and headlines to wonder what those repercussions might be. So basically it is insinuating, threatening, giving these small hints of maybe military attack or similar. But we have to remember that Russia has tried to, and somehow succeeded also, in interfering in our NATO debates for already decades and years. So also how it has done it, it has tried to smear NATO's reputation as a union. So that is also one thing that will obviously continue. So they will smear NATO as something that you should not support, or whose support should be somehow dangerous. So the old stuff.
Yes, more of the old stuff and maybe some new. Just to round it up, what would you say is the most important thing to bear in mind when it's come to fighting these kinds of trolling, harassment and so on? What is the best way for us as a society to work against it?
One thing to remember and to fight back would be definitely to support the people who are in the front lines trying to defend our countries and our democracies, because those people, as I describe in the book, are attacked and are facing basically attempts of destruction and psychological information destruction. So this is something that is really good also to remember, that the Kremlin really tries to push us into apathy. They really want to interfere into our decision making. They want to raise fear, because if we are afraid, we are easier to control. So I always tell people to continue being hopeful, happy, and brave. Because that is, and active, because that is completely the contrary what the Kremlin would love to see us be. So active citizens making our own decisions for our own futures and our own societies is the key where I would start defending the societies.
And not least, read your book.
Of course. Yes, of course.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Jessica Aro.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Jessica Aro, som alltså idag kommer ut med sin bok på svenska, Putins troll. Som man då tycker jag ska läsa, för den är väldigt intressant och lärorik och viktig. Tack till er som har lyssnat också på Ledarredaktionen, en podd från Svenska Dagbladet. Ni är varmt välkomna att höra av er till oss på redaktionen med tankar och synpunkter på det vi har precis diskuterat, eller om ni har idéer och förslag på saker vi ska ta upp i framtiden. Maila då bara ledarsidan stabla@svd.se. Dagens producent heter Jesper Sandström som vanligt. Jag heter som vanligt Andreas Eriksson. Och jag hoppas som vanligt att vi hörs igen snart.